This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with John McGinnis. LawPolitics.com is where you find his work. And, of course, John is a longtime political follower in Louisiana, author of Cross the Bear, The Last Hayride, and he will comment on the governor's tax proposal, which has been the talk of the town for the last week since this was released in a way last Friday. We'll talk with John McGinnis. Also on the show, Monday is, of course, Martin Luther King Day, and Keisha Thomas and Erica Green will discuss the MLK Day of Service event coming to Baton Rouge. And Jeff Keeney, LSU horticulture professor on gardening in Baton Rouge. He's also the director of the Burden Center, and he'll have some comments about a major event as well. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside our area. Please call 877-217-5757. You may reach us at inkstershow@wrkf.org. John McGinnis is with us, the well-known political analyst, commentator, and, of course, columnist, and his work is at lawpolitics.com, and John is the author of some well-known books about Louisiana politics, Cross the Bear, The Last Hayride among them. And good morning to you, John McGinnis.
Hey, good morning, Jim.
What's your early assessment of the governor's tax reform initiative?
Well, very first off, it really succeeded in changing the subject until he came out with the tax plan. The big topic of conversation was, or in the press, was how poorly the state was doing with just keeping up with basic necessities in his budget and having cutbacks to programs to help battered women, emotionally troubled youth, even the dying in hospice care. It was the state, one cut after another, was affecting these programs. And then the word of that he was planning is big, dramatic, far-reaching, breathtaking overhaul of the tax system seemed to shove all those concerns out the way and got everyone talking about exactly what form that tax change would take. So that's kind of a natural, but I think the big question that people need to ask, besides how many pennies will the sales tax go up, is I think what the governor needs to say is when he does put his plan all on the table, is how is this going to address what's been kind of a fundamental structural deficit in our state budget that causes these twice a year big funding cuts and deep cuts to higher education, healthcare, and the like. And how is this new tax plan going to put Louisiana on a more stable footing? I suspect that he plans to give us that, but I think that's the big question to be asked.
How can it do that and still be revenue neutral?
Well, that's a good question, especially if you're talking about being revenue neutral with what we have right now, when we really need to see, is it going to be revenue neutral with what we expected to have in coming years? I think that's a big point that PAR is making. Public Affairs Research Council is saying, you know, it's easy to go back and be revenue neutral in the past, but we're not trying to fix the past. We're trying to deal with the future. And so will this new tax plan have a growth component? What the governor is saying is that it's going to make Louisiana so attractive, we're going to be attracting new businesses to come to the state and new residents to come, and that's going to cause the state to grow. That sounds great in theory. But while we're sitting around waiting for that stampede to come, we still have to deal with our budget situation as it is, and that's not pretty. So, and then the other part is, it's a real moving target. How do you really predict that the new tax system will be revenue neutral when you're really not even sure how much the replacement taxes would be if we go ahead and eliminate the personal income tax, the corporate income tax? That's almost $3 billion. Mm-hmm. The governor has talked about we're going to maybe increase the sales tax as little as possible, but broaden the sales tax base, get rid of sales tax exemptions, tax new things like services that the state has not taxed before. Well, that's good, but how do you really ballpark exactly how much money that's going to bring in and whether it's going to be up or down? That's the real question.
297-5633 to talk with John McGinnis. And the sales tax in Louisiana is already higher than in most places.
That's number three in the country, and we're only about a half penny behind Tennessee, who's number one. So just about, even if the state ends up just adding 1 cent to the sales tax, that would put Louisiana first in another category we really don't like being first in. But then we'd be among the 10 states that don't levy an income tax, and that apparently would be very attractive to a lot of people. And the question is, will it be attractive enough to keep businesses in Louisiana to bring more business, more people here?
And there's talk the governor is also endeavoring to eliminate corporate taxes.
Corporate taxes, which already there's so many corporate tax exemptions that the tax itself brings in $370 million, but the exemptions are worth about $1.8 billion. So you don't lose as much by getting rid of the corporate income tax. But you got to deal with some things that are paid out of that corporate income tax, movie tax credits and other many tax credits that we've been writing checks against the income tax. Those have to be replaced, too. The inventory tax, what the state pays to local governments, or what the state lets people credit on their state income tax returns for the local parish taxes they pay for inventory tax, $350 million a year. That's added on top of what we're going to have to bring in. And then, of course, the other question is, if you're raising the sales tax, even if we maintain the exemption on food, drugs, and utilities, is that not having an impact on lower-income residents, especially retirees who may not be paying much in the way of income tax at all, but who do pay sales taxes? So that's the other big question. Is this going to be regressive? The governor's promising that it won't be, but we're waiting to see the numbers.
297-5633. We'll take some inquiries for John McGinnis as we move along this morning. Inkster Show at WRKF.org works as well. Now, there is also some discussion, John, that this package would include an increase on cigarette taxes, something the governor has been against. Why the change of heart?
Well, that's an easy get because the state is maybe one of the right down there with North Carolina and the tobacco states and the low tax we place on tobacco. Well, the governor didn't want to do it last year because that would have been an outright increase in taxes. This time he's saying it's a balancing. I'm cutting some taxes and balancing it by raising others, and the tobacco tax would be one of them. The state would probably raise an easy $100 million, even just by doubling the 36 cents a pack. Or bring it up to about a dollar a pack, you'd be, I'm not sure the exact numbers, but I think it'd be well north of $100 million. So that's an easy one to get, and you're also discouraging people from smoking at the same time.
Well, there is the possibility that other taxes will be involved, even some discussion about some kind of an oil processing tax. Could that realistically be part of this package?
I don't know that that is the case. There have been some I know former Governor Romer wants to have a reservoir tax. I think he talked about it on your show before, which is what Texas does. You tax the oil and gas in the ground so you don't have companies kind of gaming the system of only extracting oil and gas when the price is high. They got to pay you if they're sitting on it. They got to pay for it. But from what I heard, the governor's office says everything is on the table. But there was a report that the state would be looking to get rid of the severance tax. That is not the case, from what Revenue Secretary Tim Barfield is saying. But he is saying that they're going to just look at the whole system of how we do tax oil and gas and see if there's better efficiencies, a better way to get more money out of it.
John Kennedy, our state treasurer, was on the show a few days ago, and he said that if there is some change that is this sweeping, that it involves the Constitution and would have to go to a vote of the people. Do you sense that the governor is eager to do this if he gets the legislature to go along and then have to campaign for a tax reform measure like this?
Well, if he's got to, he's got to. The worst part would be to try to pass something and then have a lawsuit come and say you needed to change the Constitution and you didn't. I believe getting a two-thirds vote of both houses of the legislature would be more difficult than getting the people to go along, especially it depending on the way the whole thing is structured. We still have to see what the whole idea is. And I'd say another thing that's being discussed is kind of a criticism of trying to increase the sales tax is people saying, well, we're just going to force more people into buying things on the Internet. That may be so, but I believe the governor is hoping that Congress is going to act within the next few years and levy some kind of tax on Internet sales that would be remitted to the states. But there is some legislation in Congress, but apparently that's way on the back burner right now. That's not going to happen anytime soon. But that in the big picture, in the long run, is probably something that needs to be done if we're going to address fairness in sales taxes, especially considering the disadvantage that local retailers, small mom-and-pop stores, even large stores have in trying to compete with the Internet.
Mike in Sherwood. Good morning, Mike. You're on the air with John McGinnis.
Yes, Mr. McGinnis. I'm not the Mike that you guys lost earlier. I was trying to tell your producer that before he...
All right. Well, what's your question?
It's not a question. It's mostly a... Well, it is a question and a comment. Do you think the governor is trying to do one of those political flim-flams on us? Because I'm looking at a whole different scenario here. Like when you do away with your state taxes, and you know that's guaranteed money. And then when you put the 4% out there, you know you're going to get close to the revenue. Is this going to open the door up to putting ad valorem taxes on your automobiles and also your property tax? Because I see a little something under the radar here. Over in Texas, they did away with the income tax, and then after they seen where they couldn't produce enough revenues with the sales tax, they did an ad valorem tax on automobile on your plates.
All right, what's your comment?
Well, that's a good. He's raising a good point, especially concerning automobiles. There is a high automobile tax, I know, in Texas and Mississippi too, but so far the governor's people has been saying that they're not going to fool with property taxes, because property taxes on the state right now, the Constitution says it can levy a small property tax right now, meaning on real property, but that's toxic for the small amount of money that it would bring in, because the Constitution only limits the state to 5 3/4 mils. That's not a whole lot of money to die on that hill. Is probably not something the governor looks to do. But the state is very resistant to increasing property taxes. We have one of the very, very lowest property, if not the lowest, for residential property taxes in the country. I don't see that being part of this deal. But like you say, looking down the road, it may be something that pops up in the future. But I just don't think that's part of the governor's plan right now, because that would be very unpopular. And he doesn't look to do too many unpopular things.
Now, if this goes to the vote of the people of Louisiana, and that would come after, of course, two-thirds of the House and the Senate voted for it, you're talking about a substantial public relations blitz, I think, John, that would be necessary. You've seen tax reform plans in the past that didn't fare so well when they went to a vote of the citizens of our state.
Well, it certainly would be something that everybody would be engaged in. You wouldn't have to raise the consciousness of it. Everyone would be looking at it, and there'd be different opinions. So it'd be a really good, healthy public debate. And I don't think the governor would have his selling points and his talking points, but I think the debate would be bigger than that. Everyone would be talking about it.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. And we will return with John McGinnis of LawPolitics.com after this 90-second timeout on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. John McGinnis with us for a bit longer. LawPolitics.com is where you find his work, and he comments frequently on Louisiana politics. And as we know, there's always something going on. John, this was in some ways considered to be a light year because we don't have any major elections scheduled in our state this year. But if this thing goes to the vote of the people, we will have a major election, and it conceivably could be the only thing on the ballot.
I don't think it would be a good election this year. I would think it would have to go next year in 2014. I may be wrong on that, but there's no statewide election scheduled for the fall. I believe it had to be on the...
Well, remember Romer's tax reform plan went to a vote of the people in 1989 in the spring, and it was the only thing on the ballot, and it went down 55% to 45%.
There are spring elections. The fall, this couldn't be on the ballot until the fall because it would have to get to the legislature. And I don't, we'll see. Maybe you're right. I'm not sure. But there are state elections scheduled for the spring, but I'm not sure for the fall this year. So it'd be this year, it'd be next year. It'd be a big deal. But like I say, the governor wouldn't have to be ginning up interest on this. Everyone would be involved. Everyone would have a say, especially the, if anyone's going to be losing an exemption or having a new tax put on them, you'd have a lot of involvement. You'd probably have a lot of third-party expenditures out there by different groups trying to influence one way or the other. It'd be you're right. That election in '89 was one I remember at the time. It really captivated public interest. I think this would much more so. But first, it's got to get through the legislature, and that ain't no easy deal. Getting 2/3 through there. It may not be something that happens this year, and it may, but it could well be a debate that'll be with us for a while.
Well, and in the interim, if this plan is in the works, somehow, some way, the governor and his staff and the legislature, they have to find a way to pay the bills of state.
That's the key. That's the deal right there. We've got a budget to pass right now, and it's not looking good. It hadn't been looking good for last 5 years. Every year we pass a budget that come December more cuts have to be made because the revenues are not coming in. The governor's got to address that first and foremost, and he'll start doing it in February when he presents his executive budget to the legislature. That's first order of business.
Silas writes, the playbook that Jindal offensive coordinator Timmy Teeple has cooked up may be suitable for the Louisiana Conference, but it will never get Jindal to even the regional playoffs, much less the conference championship or the Super Bowl. Jindal may be a brilliant political campaigner, writes Silas, but it's hard to view him as a skilled practitioner of governance. As he enters his sixth year in office, Louisiana is almost by any objective measure a failing state, and if he doesn't change course quickly as his political capital dwindles, he will leave it in shambles. Does your guest think it's time for the governor to get a new offensive coordinator?
Well, I think Silas kind of frames the issue pretty well. The governor and Timmy Teeple are pretty tight, and I don't see any changes there. But he still, even if he had another offensive coordinator, as you said, he still has to deal with the situation as it is. And he's right. Louisiana is just has a lot of problems that are bigger than one governor can solve. And unfortunately for Jindal, he is going to be, if he does aspire or reaches out for higher office, that's going to be his record is going to be not just his record, but the state's record is going to be under the microscope, and people are going to look at the poverty maintained pretty strong throughout, and educational problems and budget problems. I like to say that the biggest problem Bobby Jindal has is us. We the people that just are not measuring up to the standards that he is setting for us, that's going to be a weight on him as he tries to go forward. And there's just not a whole lot he can do about it in the span of one legislative session or even one term in office.
297-5633 is your number, and John McGinnis is surveying the landscape as we contemplate another major initiative from Governor Bobby Jindal, and this one involves sweeping changes in taxes. Now, who's most likely to lead the opposition on this?
Well, I believe local government will have something to say, because you figure if you raise a state sales tax even 2 cents, that's going to wipe out the chances of local governments going and trying to get a tax increase from their people. And also, another part of the governor's plan is to go toward some form of a single state tax collector, so that businesses in the state only have to fill out one sales tax form, instead of if you're doing business in 20 parishes in Louisiana, you got to fill out 20 forms. And also, if there's going to be any change in taxing the internet sales, the state would have to have a single tax collector. That is a big issue for local governments. They don't trust the state being involved in collecting their taxes. And so you probably local government has the most on the line here. And they're pretty powerful voice in the legislature when you add in school boards, the sheriffs, and assessors, and all like that.
Scott in St. Francisville. Scott, you're on the air with John McGinnis.
Hi, fellas. Just to change the subject just for a second, Jim and John and I, we all spent a lot of years in the Lorians, perhaps at different ages. And, Jim, I think you would really enjoy if you could pry away from his affiliate that he worked for and get archive footage of him covering a hurricane out there on Lakeshore Drive at Lake Pontchartrain. Huh. A youthful exuberance. Very, very excited with John McGinnis out there in his early years covering that hurricane. I still remember it today.
Well, you got me, because I don't remember. I had no idea what you're talking about. There's a few John McGinnises out there, but I never did any. One thing, I never worked for a TV station, and I had more sense than to get out in a hurricane. I always sheltered in place.
But John, who is my hero, has found a way to make journalism profitable to him. You actually have a home in New Orleans, don't you?
Well, I rent an apartment down there, in the French Quarter, like a lot of Baton Rougeans have places in New Orleans, and that's always kind of a quiet connection between the two cities. Jackie and I love going down to the Quarter, and we live kind of in the back of the Quarter in the residential area. And we know more people by their first name in the Quarter than we do in our own subdivision here in Baton Rouge.
Well, and it is remarkable that it's no more than an hour away, and in many ways, it's a world apart.
A world apart. It's just a whole different world. It's a fabulous, beautiful place. My family is from New Orleans, and I was born in Baton Rouge, but I've always had just a very strong connection to the city.
Charles Inventress. Good morning, Charles. You're on with John. Yes, sir.
Yes, John. My question is that at both the federal and the state level, we Americans pay, I would say, per capita, a low tax rate compared to the rest of the world, and I really don't see how we're going to continue to have the kind of state and federal services that we demand without some serious tax increases, which the people don't seem to want to support. So how do we get around this problem of wanting much more than we can afford to deliver? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, that's the plight of the taxpayer. They always want more than what they're paying for, and they don't want to give up anything when it comes to cutting spending. You're right. This is a relatively low-tax state. I mean, federal taxes are the same across the board in every state, but you know, we have a low – some people don't think that, but we do have a low-tax state for individuals. The saving grace is that there's a lot of big companies here who shoulder a lot of the load, especially on property taxes. But I don't see that dynamic changing anytime soon of any kind of substantial increase in, obviously, personal income taxes or property taxes.
Ellen in Sherwood. Hi, Ellen. You're on the air with John McGinnis.
Hi. I agree with that previous caller and with that email that said Jindal is a failed governor. He has definitely failed. He's an extreme ideologue, and he and Timmy Teeple are just way out there. And the income tax, no income tax would be the worst thing for Louisiana. We're already suffering so much. They dismantled the Stelly tax, which was a fair tax. And now they're going to do this. Corporations don't pay their fair share in this state, and businesses, and they need to ask. We need the wealthier people to pay a little more instead of just making the poor suffer, and the middle class and lower middle class suffer even more.
All right, thank you, Ellen. John.
I'm not going to dispute what Ellen says, except that I'm not going to go out on a limb and say the general was a failed governor, but he certainly has his ideology, and he was elected. And so just like kind of on the national level, a lot of people have a problem with President Obama. On a local level, a lot of people have a problem with Governor Jindal, who are different parties, but elections have consequences. So that in a broad view, we got what we got. But I don't see that he's going to change his stripes or ideology anytime soon. And I don't see, she does make a really good point about the income tax. We need to think long and hard before we jettison the personal income tax. It is a stable tax, but it is a bigger growth factor than sales taxes, even though the governor, I think, is trying to make a point that it does not. It's going to be a basic difference between him and Public Affairs Research Council. They've already kind of drawn a line on that debate. It's kind of a romantic notion, I think, Senator John Alario put it, of getting rid of the personal income tax. But as far as the stability of the state and fairness, tax fairness, that's a big debate to have, and that's what we're going to have in the legislature.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on WRKF with John McGinnis.
Yes. With all the concerns about the budget, do you find that Jindal has been currying favor with the legislators by putting them in his administration so their retirement income is spiked?
Well, once you put them in the administration, they're no further use to you as a legislator. Then what's more been his practice is he's kind of put in administrative jobs people who've been kind of trouble for him. He gets rid of them that way. Not outright enemies, but just sort of people who could be trouble. So, but yeah, he tries to, he has taken care of some legislators who have left, and he's rewarded some of them by giving them jobs in the administration. I think those are noted every time it is, but that only goes so far as with helping you with the future legislature, because you got some legislators say he doesn't curry favor with them at all. He hardly gives them the time of day, and there's a lot of frustration there because Governor Jindal is his political style. He doesn't he's not one, and I think President Obama gets the same criticism for not being chummy and social and doing the things you kind of expect politicians to do. That's just not his style.
Now, is that any different than previous governors?
Oh, yeah. Previous governors have they went out of their way. They were Louisiana politicians. They had social relationships, and they were more accessible. The mansion was mm-hmm. a place that was, I wouldn't say open to everybody, but it was open, and the legislators would come and go. There'd be more social functions there. This place is on lockdown, and it's just a family home now. You got three kids, and of course they're entitled to that privacy. But I think that's just part of Bobby Jindal's personality. He doesn't have a wide circle of social friends, and he doesn't engage in that kind of lifestyle. But that's his prerogative.
Now, it is curious, John, that this plan has been floating about, at least rumors of a plan, for a week, and the governor, who has to be the quarterback, he's not out there in front of this. Other people are chattering about it.
Yeah, he's using Revenue Secretary Tim Barfield, Economic Development Secretary Stephen Morey have been his point people on this. When the time comes, I'm sure the governor will have to carry the ball. You're right. You have to give him some time to. We want him. I'd rather him think this out and come through with a proposal that makes some sense instead of rushing to put something out to answer the media. This kind of got out there as he started talking to legislators. It just kind of got out in the press, and so. But I'm not sure when he plans to present his plan. I would hope that he doesn't wait till the week before the legislative session starts the way he did with his education plan before he filed those bills. I would hope he comes out with the overall plan that's pretty specific, you know, and give us the whole the state a month or so at least to start kicking around and talking about it before we get into legislative action. This is not going to be a legislative experience like we had with the education, the vouchers and the tenure changes. That was rammed through in the first 3 weeks of the session by majority vote. This takes a two-thirds vote.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a lot more debate and time to deal with it.
Wade at Louis. Hi, Wade. You're on with John.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. My observation is the reason Jindal can rally support for this kind of radical right agenda is that because of the failure of previous Democratic leaders, particularly Edwin Edwards. I mean, the state, despite all his power and charisma, the state just never advanced in all the fundamentals of poverty and education and health care and all those indicators. When he had the opportunity to do it. And so that just left the door open for some, radical agenda like this.
All right. Thank you, Wade. John?
Well, you know, Edwin Edwards, you know, left office, 17 years ago, and seems like...
In fact, his wife was in high school when he finished his last term.
And he still seems like he's almost like he's still on the political scene. He's certainly on the public scene. I like to say that Bobby Jindal, you know, ran against Edmund Edwards twice, or the ghost of Edmund Edwards. He kept raising the ghost of, politics of the past, and we can't be like that. Even though, you have to say, I mean, since Edmund Edwards, we've had three conservative, basically conservative governors, Mike Foster, Kathleen Blanco, not really conservative, but certainly moderate to conservative, and Bobby Jindal. But still, we're still raising the specter of Edwin Edwards, and it leaves these guys, our governors, with easy acts to follow. But I think it's time to move on and put Edwin Edwards where he belongs in our past politically, and start dealing with the here and now.
All right, Ray in Denham Springs. Ray, you're on with John.
Thank you. Do you think that the way the president is running the country is the same way Governor Jindal is trying to run the state of Louisiana?
You know, they have similar political styles. They really do. They're kind of more aloof and thinkers. But I don't. Of course, you've got totally different situations with the legislative branches. The Congress is, he has to deal with the House of Representatives. That's pretty conservative and has given him trouble. Jindal so far has not had a whole lot of difficulty in dealing with the legislature. They bitch and complain that he didn't give them, time of day often, but they're all Republicans and majority both houses and tend to vote his way. So.
We'll return for a few more minutes with John McGinnis after this 90-second pause on WRKF, and then we'll hear from Jeff Keeney and Peggy Coates on gardening, and we'll talk about MLK Day. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher producing, and John McGinnis with us for a few more moments commenting on the governor's tax reform plan that is about to be floated to the public in an official way. Thomas and Walden, good morning, Thomas. You're on with John.
Good morning. Thanks, Jim, for airing this subject. I was curious to know if there have been any figures from the states that have taken off the income tax about what it has provided in the way of keeping people in the state, attracting people to the state, or businesses to the state. Any kind of figures or percentages of how successful they feel like it's been in their area?
All right. Thank you, Thomas. John?
I don't know of any states that have done it recently. Maybe they have been. I don't know when Texas got rid of their income tax. So I don't know that there's been anything recent that you can point to and use as numbers. There may be, but I'm just not aware of it.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on with John McGinnis.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mr. McGinnis. I would ask you what you think of how New Orleans is doing these days and Mitch Landrieu's performance, as well as what should our state revenue be? I mean, I think it's $24 billion now. And what other states do you see as being successful now that you could point to as good examples for us to look at? Thank you.
Well, as far as New Orleans goes, I think New Orleans, they talk about an easy act to follow. Mayor Mitch Landrieu has fallen in Ray Nagin's footsteps, can't do a whole lot wrong. We're waiting to hear sometime this month about the fate of former Mayor Nagin with the federal authorities, whether he's going to enter a plea deal or get indicted. That said, Mayor Landrieu certainly is still struggling with dealing with the Justice Department, a consent decree on the police department, the jail. Well, he's got a full plate. As far as how Louisiana stacks up with other states, they're all so different in the way they, what they tax, and of course even the makeup of the state and the kind of economy they have. So I'm not an expert on all the other states. People want to try and compare us to Texas or Florida, but it's two vastly different tax regimes and two different kind of economies in those states. And so I don't have that. I couldn't put a finger on saying what other state in the union is most like Louisiana to that we could really compare it to.
Here's a question from John in New Roads. He asks about Walmart's position on the Jindal plan. I would imagine some retailers, and we're talking about the biggest retailer in the world, John, they might not like this idea.
No, I think you're right. They may like the idea of internet sales being taxed. That may help some of them, but I think the retailers may have some problems with this. The big retailers may. I'm not sure about the small ones, especially if there is something happens on the internet sales. But that has to come from Congress, and it's not going to happen real soon. But that will be something to deal with. Anyone who's trying to sell something having to tackle on 2 or 3 cents onto what they're selling is going to be an issue. So you're right. I think the retailers are going to have some issues.
Delia, our final question for John asks, should we amend our Constitution to require any governor to meet at least once a week in an open public forum with representatives of the media and the public in general to answer questions about his stewardship of government? And while we're at it, should we require that the governor's schedule be made public 48 hours in advance?
Well, in the first question, I think that'd be like the House of Commons, right? We have questions. I love to watch that on C-SPAN, watching David Cameron take these questions from Parliament. You can't do that by constitution. You could do it by constitution, but it doesn't. That's up to an individual governor to do that. I don't see that happening. But what was the second question?
About the 48-hour advance notice for the governor's schedule.
Well, the president of the United States has a more open schedule than the governor of Louisiana, and I would like to see that. Or even for after some period of time to be able to look back and see more of what he did and what he said and what he wrote. But there's a total blackout coming from the governor's office. And, for all the talk about transparency, we raise the issue a lot in the press, and Des Moines Advocate makes a big deal about it. It doesn't seem to really go over with the ordinary citizen. Doesn't really seem to care.
They've got other problems in their lives.
Yeah, if they did care, that would change, but so it's not yet.
And we thank Stephen Morey, who, of course, is the Secretary of Economic Development. He's obviously listening to you, John. He writes, Parr did suggest that utilizing both tax types, sales and income, would provide a more stable base, presumably due to the diversity of tax sources, but I don't think they made a strong case for that being true. We looked at state sales taxes versus state income taxes at the national level over the last 10 years. A sales tax-only model was more stable over that period of time than a 50-50 mix of sales taxes and income taxes. That from Stephen Morey.
Well, he raises a good point. But I suggest, though, in looking at Louisiana, if you look back in Louisiana the last 10 years, the income tax went through a lot of changes at the hands of the legislature. They enacted the Stelly tax plan. They got rid of the Stelly tax plan. We had Katrina with all that influx of federal money. That federal money ran out. So, yeah, the income tax in Louisiana has been all over the boards in the last decade. But that's a common debate. Morey does, it is true, That's what Parr said. We should kind of we a diverse tax base of sales and income taxes is the most stable, and we certainly could look at some trade-offs and lowering the income tax, but certainly Parr is not on board yet with the idea of just getting rid of the income tax. But that's a healthy debate to have, and I'm looking forward to Secretary Mulray and the governor presenting all those figures for public debate.
Thank you, John McGinnis. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Jim.
Going to New Orleans? Yeah, I think he's on his way. And in studio now, Jeff Keeney, the horticulture professor at LSU and the director of the Burden Center, along with Peggy Coates, who is involved with the Hilltop Arboretum. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
Well, tell us about, first of all, your event tomorrow. This is that time of year, isn't it?
It's that time of year. People need to start, especially with the sun coming out. It's time to start thinking about the getting your garden together.
Well, we're a gardening type of community, no doubt about it. People here take pride in their gardens, and you are no exception, right?
Yeah, I guess I hope so.
I know your next door neighbor for a long time was Jules Demacourt. Was he a gardener?
Actually, he wasn't much of a vegetable gardener, but he did love to plant a few things in his backyard.
And why do you think you've lived in other places? Why do you think Baton Rouge is kind of a haven for people who are into plants and things like that?
I think Baton Rouge still kind of has a little bit of that agrarian background where people like to get in their yards, they like to plant, but they not only like to plant just for aesthetics, they like to plant to enjoy some nourishment as well.
Well, tomorrow, among the topics, fruit, vegetables, and herbs to your garden, right?
Yes.
Well, what do I need to know about these things?
Well, I think some of the other speakers that we're going to have are going to talk about kind of the history of vegetable gardens and people planting vegetable gardens. And one of the things that has happened in more recently is that we have a huge variety of different kinds of vegetables that mm-hmm. we can choose from. And so people can make an aesthetic garden as well as an edible garden. You've got cauliflower that can come in purple, gold, green, all different colors. So you can have a purple and gold cauliflower garden.
Now, you'll be talking about the Trinity Gardens, gardening for the eyes, the stomach, and spirit, creative design solutions for incorporating beautiful edible plants and ornamentals into your garden for their aesthetic value. How do we do that?
And so, like I was saying, we've got such a wide selection of different vegetables and fruits that we can use in our gardens now, so we can add that aesthetic value to our garden, so it's not only good to eat, but nice to look at, and also, we know that working outside and enjoying nature is good for your spirit, so you get all three.
This is tomorrow at the LSU Design Building, among other places. Where will you be convening throughout the day?
We'll be at the LSU Design Building, and then we will also, Peggy's arranged tours to several different gardens in around Baton Rouge.
All right, Peggy Coates, tell us about that.
Yeah, well, we thought after people would hear these great presentations, and I want to say real quickly that also speaking tomorrow will be Peter Hatch, who was the curator and garden director of Thomas Jefferson's Monticello, and he'll be talking about his work there for some 30 years in restoring what I consider the father of edible gardens in our country. And then our own Suzanne Turner has just written a marvelous, beautiful work on the garden diary of Martha Turnbull, who was the mistress of Rosedown Plantation. So they'll be speaking with Jeff. And after that program, we've had some very generous community partners that are opening up edible gardens throughout the Baton Rouge area where you can see plants in the garden, see what might work for your own home. And so you'll be able to tour the LSU Lab School Vegetable Garden. As a matter of fact, they grow so many vegetables, they give some to St. Vincent de Paul and to the food bank. Jeff is opening up the All-America Selection Garden at the Burden Center. The Rural Life Plantation Garden will mm-hmm. be open. And John Sykes is opening up Magnolia Mound Plantation and the kitchen garden there.
Well, that's tomorrow. Starts at 8:30 at the Design Building, 302 Fieldhouse Drive. And you can find out more by calling 225-767-6916, 225-767-6916. Thank you, Dr. Jeff Keeney and Peggy Coates, who bears the name of the first football coach at Louisiana State University.
And I'm happy to say I'm married to his wonderful grandson, and it's such a legacy here, isn't it?
Thank you, Peggy. Thank you, Jeff. And since we're talking about events, and we'll talk about another one in just a moment, I think Baton Rouge should be saluted for bringing so many heavyweights of entertainment to our area in the next few days. Tomorrow, for example, Engelbert Humperdinck is in town. So is B.B. King. And next week, it's Willie Nelson, followed shortly thereafter by Diana Ross with the symphony and Gladys Knight. And of course, Bill Maher, who was with us earlier in the week, will be here on January 27th. And I may actually be missing a few, but some significant headliners. It's like the old days. They're coming our way all in the next month. And of course, Monday is Martin Luther King Day. It is a holiday for many, and with us to talk about the Day of Service, the 2013 event, are two people involved, Keisha Thomas and Erica Green. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for having us.
Well, tell us what will happen with the Day of Service.
Well, we'll be out in the community in the 70805 zip code doing a day of service, a beautification project at some of the EBR schools as well as Recovery School District schools to try to improve the area for some of the senior citizens in the area. We'll be improving their homes. We have landscape projects planned. We have some community gardens that we'll do at some of the schools. We have some minor renovations and repairs that we'll do. It's going to be a phenomenal day, and we're asking the community to come out and be a part of it.
So where do you gather?
We will be gathering at Living Faith Christian Center, which is located at on Winburn Avenue, and we're asking that you come out at 6:30 to register, because we've ended our pre-registration. But if you come out at 6:30, our opening program will begin at 8, and we will have a lunch program. We're providing a light breakfast, lunch, and snacks throughout the day.
This
free
is
of charge.
6:30
a.m.
Monday?
Yes.
Okay, Monday, which is the big day, the annual holiday for Martin Luther King Jr. And there's no more appropriate way to commemorate his memory, I think, than to be a part of something that is substantial for our community.
Absolutely. We're asking people to make it a day on and not a day off, to come out and do something for the community instead of staying in and sleeping in and doing nothing that day. We think it's really important, and our sorority, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, we're celebrating our 100-year anniversary this year, and we're an organization that is committed to serve. That's what we've been founded on. That's what we do, and we want to invite all groups across the city, individuals. Please come out. Be a part of this event. We have 1,200 people already pre-registered, and we want more.
1,200.
Mm-hmm. We had over 1,500 in participation last year, Jim, and this year we want that to double. So come out, be a part of this. It's going to be truly an amazing event. We have some really great people that have stepped up. The mayor's office is a part of this project, and the Brave team. I talked to the state troopers on my way here this morning. They'll be out there to assist us as well. They want to be in the community doing something good, and we want the community to come out and be a part of it.
And right. We are gathering at Living Faith, but we will transport volunteers to each site on that day. So you can park your cars, and then we'll get you there.
Do you have the address for Living Faith?
I think it's 6375.
Winburn Avenue.
Yeah, okay. 6375 Winburn Avenue. And your sorority, Delta Sigma Theta, this is the catalyst for this, isn't it?
It is. We have we received a grant last year that asked us to coordinate this event. And so this year is our second year actually doing so. But we want to stress the fact that we have several different groups involved. Lots of the social clubs throughout the city, the different sororities and fraternities, church groups, individuals, different organizations within the school systems. It's really going to be a great event.
Now, you are both young people. What does the memory of Martin Luther King mean to you?
It means giving back and not waiting for somebody to give to you.
What do you know about him?
I know that he was a great man that gave his life to make sure that I could sit here with you today.
A man full of faith, full of courage, and a man that was committed to providing opportunities for others. And we just want to do the same thing and live his legacy.
Born January 15th, 1929, Atlanta, Georgia. Died April 4th. 1968, Memphis, Tennessee. He was 39 years old. He's been gone longer than he was alive.
Yes.
It'll be 45 years in a couple of months. He certainly made a profound impact on lives of every American and every person in the world.
Well, thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing everyone out there on Monday to definitely continue his legacy.
And for more information about this event, the day of service, 220-9438, 225-220-9438. Thank you, Keisha Thomas and Eric Green, and thank you for listening, everybody. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back Monday. Until then, for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.